after the week to introduce themselves, then we will allow our guests to introduce themselves, and then a hearty welcome to all of you. This meeting is officially open. I will start here on my left, front row. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to everybody. My name is Dr. Shiva Pillai. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee.
Good morning. I'm Gloria Bowman, member of the Portfolio Committee.
My name is Linda Nana. I'm the member of this committee.
Ramani Sandai, member of the committee. Peter van Dalen, also a member of this committee.
Gerard Koornhof, a member of the committee.
Sibidi Mangena, a member of the committee.
Chris Hololu, member of the committee.
Thank you. Just before we proceed, I will ask the members on the second row, Mr. Hololu. I might not, you run the risk of me not seeing you when you raise your hand. I need eye contact with you. So that seat must be left open. I will kindly ask you to please, so that I can see you. All right, thanks. We may proceed with introductions.
I'm Lillian Boyle, chairperson of South African Express Airways.
I'm Susan Zimela, chief executive officer of South African Express Airways.
I'm Esther Bauman, I'm the executive manager of finance.
I'm Joachim van Meerten, Department of Public Enterprises, aviation specialist.
I'm Dave Allenby, general manager of flight operations, South African Express Airways.
My name is George Mutema, company secretary, South African Express Airways.
My name is Ndeng Mumaya, Chief Director of Aviation, Department of Public Enterprises.
My name is BDC Abulela from Department of Public Enterprises, Administration.
My name is Sam Manduana, DPE.
My name is Tarek Korkati, Director of the Portfolio Committee.
I don't think I had it.
Tarek Korkati, Director for the Portfolio Committee.
My name is Isang Muchumi and I'm the committee secretary.
Okay. Didn't leave out anyone. Thank you. Who are you, sir?
My name is Nicole Makishana from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
You will sign the guest register also. Even if you are sitting that far. Thank you. I welcome South African Express. We will still put this to you that you are predominantly male. Even if your CEO is female, your chairperson is female, the fact remains you are predominantly male, and we're not happy with it. Having said this, I will allow the chairperson or the CEO, I don't know how you prefer to, yes. Over to you, ma'am, and your people.
Technology. It's a great pleasure for us to be here and have the opportunity to present our annual report for the financial year, which ended in March this year. Obviously, it's some time back, but we were pleased with our year. We had a very good year, and sufficient for me to say that the company produced excellent results in a very difficult trading environment. The recession was definitely beginning to bite during that 12-month period here. Fuel costs soared to unprecedented levels before retreating. So yet another year of profit growth in the company was an outstanding achievement. We congratulated management at our AGM on a sound performance all round and not just in terms of profitability, and some of those highlights we'll share with you today. There were a couple of issues which occupied a great deal of management's attention during the year. A lot of work was done in concluding the transfer from Transnet to the Department of Public Enterprises and finalising the recapitalisation of the company, the result of which has been a significant improvement in the balance sheet. We're very grateful for the support of both DPE and the National Treasury in this regard. Similarly, quite a lot of time, i.e. non-operational time, was devoted to renegotiation of the 14-year-old commercial agreement with our partner, South African Airways. It did take a lot of time, but I'm very happy to say that in the course of the early part of this month, that new agreement has been concluded. Those matters aside, the company maintained its focus on the development of its people, and we focused on the skills development, and of course, rather than retrench, as many countries in the land have done, we took the opportunity to increase our training efforts. The company successfully implemented the first phase of what we choose to call the MAC 2 Cadet Pilots Program, and the staff also were complimented at our meeting on the commitment, on their commitment and for the achievements in efficiency improvements which translated into reducing costs in the business. The current year is obviously proving much more difficult as passenger numbers globally continue to decline. Our first half year to September reflects a significant shortfall in profitability and cash generation relative to budget, but I'm glad to say that at the half-year stage, we are ahead of last year, which is also management to be complimented for that. We, in the course of this morning's session, we would like to take you through some of the key financial highlights, quite a bit on some of the highlights in terms of our employee information, introduce you to what may or may not be well known, but the key points of our strategic focus, and we'd also like to touch on a few operational highlights, including benchmarking against our local competitors. And to do that, I would like to introduce Caesar and ask her to take you through the first section.
Thank you.
Before you proceed, we apologize for receiving you so late after you had tabled your results. It's because Parliament had to take recession in the middle. So it's normally exciting when you come just after. So please forgive us. We will schedule you first next year. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. As the person, chairperson has already indicated, I'm just going to go very quickly over the financial highlights. And if there are any further questions relating to those, we're happy to take those at the end. We'd also hoped to use the overhead projector, so that's not functional. So I hope that everybody's got a copy of the presentation. I shall try to go page by page so that everybody can keep up to speed. In terms of the financial highlights for the past year, we managed to grow our passenger numbers by 3.1% versus the previous period. We grew turnover by 21%. Our costs also grew by 22%, but you'll see later on that we were quite proud of the fact that despite the fact that we had a growth or an increase in the fuel price of over 50%, that we're still able to come in with the cost growth of only 22%. Our net profit actually indicated a 19% improvement year on year, and our operating profit, 8% on that. On the next page, what we show are just some of our key financial performance indicators, and what we've done is that we've shown the previous year and we've shown the current or the last financial year, just to show the comparison in terms of our performance. And as our chairperson has already indicated, that we've just come out or ended a financial year which was really tough given the recession and everything else. And that's somehow reflected in some of our figures, despite the fact that we are quite proud that we did actually record positive figures. But you'll see that previously where we registered growth
numbers of 18.3% in this last financial year. We also registered revenue growth figures of 7.4%. And basically, as we go down, it's really just a comparison to show that in the previous year, we had registered growth, passenger growth numbers of 6%, and in the last financial year, at 3.1%. We managed to keep our load factors the same, and we improved our on-time performance, which is, a very good indicator of the operational improvements. Our EBITDA improved, slightly over the year, and with some of the issues that we dealt with, internally, we were able to end the last financial year with a cash interest cover of 5.7%, which was an improved position to the previous financial year. And our operating margin, despite the challenging environment, we're still able to maintain at a 26%. And our return on assets was slightly lower than the previous year. On the next page, it's just a more detailed report on some of the figures that I've already mentioned. And I think what is key, on this particular slide for us, is to show that, we talked about the fact that, passenger numbers only increased by 3.1%, but our turnover increased by 21%. And if you look at the detail of that, is that, we did have an increase, passenger revenue. But over and above that, we also saw, registered a significant growth in other income. And that other income came about as a result of the third-party work that we did on the maintenance side for the other carriers, in the region. So it was, that's what assisted us, to also grow our turnover at 21%. I've already also mentioned the fact that our total expenses had already increased year on year, but we're also quite proud of the fact that despite that our fuel bill increased by 50%, we were able to come in at those levels. What is significant, from an SA Express perspective, is that we chose not to hedge in this year. Despite the fact that the prices were going up, based on the analysis that we've done internally, we actually took the decision not to hedge our fuel. And I think in the end, that probably also played a major role in helping us to register the positive results that are in front of you today. I have already obviously talked about our operating profit and our net profit after tax and the fact that year on year there was an improvement. Equally, we saw a big improvement in our balance sheet with a 31% increase in total assets, compared to the previous comparative period. And our net asset value increased to 1 billion, as you can see, compared to a negative 26 million in the previous period. Our total liabilities, decreased by 61% compared to the previous period, and this was really as a result of us actually concluding settling all of the historical payments that related to some of our aircraft because of the way in which the aircraft had previously been structured. They had been structured in such a way that there were huge bullet payments at the end of the period. And in this last financial year, we were able to resolve all of those issues. In the next couple of slides, which I'll run through quite quickly, essentially what we're doing is just showing you more of the trend analysis, which is not just the last 2 years, but to say how we've been doing for the last 5 years. And as you can see, we have managed to double our revenue over the last 5 years. And on the next page, we show that our operating profit has grown by over 300 million over the last 5 years as well. And as our chairperson has already indicated, that in the process, we also found ourselves in the fortunate position of being able to increase our staff numbers as opposed to reducing our staff numbers. This obviously is directly linked to the fact that if you look, 5 years ago, we were operating 13 aircraft. We are now operating 23, aircraft. And you'll see later on some of the graphs that we use to try and measure efficiency, that although, we've grown our staff numbers, it does not mean, that we're now sitting with a large number of people that we may one day find ourselves needing to retrench. We then just have some of the highlights around, the employment, our employment profile. And you see that, SA Express currently employs 889 staff, which reflects quite positively against the national industry benchmark. With a split of 46% of those and being African, 9.9 colored, 2.3 Indian and white, 41.5%. The area which remains a challenge for us, is the FlyTech group. And of the 200 pilots that we have today, 88% of those are still white. So what we have done in order to try and address, some of those discrepancies is that, in the last year, we launched what we call a Cadet Mark II program. And a Cadet Mark II program is basically identifying those pilots or commercial the previously disadvantaged individuals who are already qualified as commercial pilots, but you would find that they do not have enough hours to actually be able to enter employment of airlines such as ourselves. What we did is that we went out to recruit those individuals and we put them through a program to bring them up bring up their hours to such a level that they now operate in our system. We're now at the initial stage of starting what we call the Mark 1, and the Mark 1 is where you do take children or students straight out of the high school with very good math and science subjects, and you take them through a two-year program. Our board has kindly approved for us, to actually take in 10 of these, individuals in this next coming year or this current financial year. On the technical front, since 2005, we're proud of the fact that we've trained up to 75, technicians from a previously disadvantaged background to date via our apprenticeship, program, which we offer. On the next slide, what we wanted to show is really just the ratio of management.
Susan, we are going to take you back to those two slides.
Okay.
Very seriously.
Okay?
Okay. Very helpful.
On our next slide, what we show is just our management, to staff, ratio. Because, for us, that's also important that we don't find ourselves being too top-heavy, and you find that, because it actually ends up results in some level of inefficiency. So it is one of the things that, that we monitor, quite closely. And as you see, the next slide is just to show you how, our profile reflects in terms of, the executive management and staff to the rest of the staff. On the next slide, which is quite an important one, for us, because we track it, pretty closely, is that you see that, in terms of, the industry, the industry has been, we've been given 5-year targets as an industry, and you see that all of the targets are actually listed, on the first column of this particular page. And what we do is monitor our progress as SA Express compared to that 5-year target. I think what I just need to emphasize is the fact that we're only in the first year of, the 5-year target. But if you look in terms of how we as SA Express are performing against those targets, we're already well ahead, on most of of those targets, except for 3 areas, which is black women in junior management, black employees living with disabilities, and black women living with disabilities. That's where we're falling short. And as a result, that is an area of focus for us, going forward. But we're quite confident that we will actually meet or exceed these targets prior to the 5-year period that has been stipulated for us. In terms of our strategic, focus, we just wanted to revisit that and say that we believe that, it's important for us to remain focused on what our core business is. And really from a domestic perspective, our goal is to consolidate our presence in the current markets, that we operate. And we always make emphasis on this because we always want to make sure that, there is no confusion, between, people ask us the questions, why are you not flying between Johannesburg and Durban? Why are you not flying between Johannesburg and Cape Town? But we're pretty clear that that's not what our focus is. As a regional carrier, our job, and our mandate is to try and grow the secondary markets. And we want to actually make sure that we do not lose focus and we grow frequency and presence in those markets. We are, on target, to meet our goal to increase our turnover or revenue to over 2.2 billion in this financial year. And we've set ourselves, a goal, obviously, to develop, human capital within our environment. And I think some of the things that I've already just mentioned go a long way to begin to address some of those issues. Another of our key goals is to improve, the revenue that's derived via direct channels. And this is really just to build efficiencies in the business, because we've looked and compared and said, if you compare yourself or benchmark yourself with other good airlines or great airlines around the world, what are the things that they're looking for? Or what are the things that they monitor quite closely? Or what are the things that they're trying to move towards? And this is the one area that we believe we need to actually focus on, because what it does is that it actually helps to reduce, the cost in the long term. We are also focused on building a sustainable cargo business. And of course, most important is that as we do all of that, we want to sustain our profitability. So we always make the point, and I think, for those, who have gone through, our annual report, we may always make the point that we don't chase market share, but rather we ensure that in whatever we do, that we maintain our profitability. Because it's only through the process of being profitable that we're going to be able to grow. Because it's much more difficult, to motivate for growth if you're not profitable. And that's really, from where we come from. And then, last but most importantly is that, we're fully committed to establish the Intra-Africa Hub, strategy. And that on the next page, you will see how we intend to actually do that. And we show, the slide that says we're already sitting in the south. We already have a Southern African hub. But it probably makes sense, for us to also have, an East African hub and a West African hub. And the reason why we talk about hubs is that an SA Express operation cannot actually do long haul. And that's not what the purpose of an SA Express operation is. But we think there's a lot of value of actually duplicating what we've done in the South African market in the rest of the continent, which is to provide, access or feed into a main hub, feeding the surrounding areas of the secondary market into that main hub. So that's what, we are going to be focusing on and that's what we're focused on. And just to address the question, because it is always asked, if you're talking about, if SA Express is talking about going into Africa, how does that conflict with what SAA is actually talking about? And I always respond by saying it's not in conflict, but it complements what SAA does. Precisely for the reason that we have no intention, to be a mainline carrier and to run an SAA-type operation, but to, however, as I said, duplicate what we do in the domestic market, which is if we go, to a West Africa hub, for argument's sake, it probably doesn't make sense, for SAA to have a leg that goes Accra, Abidjan, for argument's sake, because of the passenger numbers. But it makes sense for SAA to offer a large number of frequencies between Johannesburg and Accra as the main hub. What we would then do, to complement, the services, is to offer, the services in out of Accra into the surrounding areas and feed into the Accra hub for SAA, to grow even further. So it complements, what SAA intends to do, on the complement, does not have conflict. On the next couple of slides, it's really just slides to show you some of the areas that we look to, in terms of efficiency improvement. I have already spoken about the fact that it is important for us, to monitor the revenue that we derive from direct bookings, via direct bookings as opposed to travel agent bookings. And at this stage, we're sitting with 28% being direct and 72% still with travel agents. So there is still a huge room for improvement, in that perspective. The next slide actually shows, our benchmark, as we benchmark our employees, the aircraft, and we compare ourselves in terms of, our other competitors in the market in terms of how they're doing on that. And you see that if you look at this slide, it looks like we're doing really well. However, it probably is not the true reflection because of the size of aircraft that we operate. So the more valuable slide is on the next page, which is really a benchmark of employees per aircraft seat. And we've reflected, how we are performing against that. I think the reason why we also monitor this is that we are in a period where we're growing quite quickly. And we also want to make sure that as we grow, we're growing in the right areas of the business, which is in the operational, areas. And we don't find ourselves, with too many started at a later stage. And this just helps us to ensure that we don't lose, focus on some of the efficiency areas. The next slide is really, turnaround time. And what we've done is that we've taken the slide or a sample of airlines out of ORT, airports. And the reason we've done that is that if we had to show you what a turnaround is out of the smaller airports such as Bloemfontein and Kimberley, there we turn our aircraft around in 20 minutes. But in order to do a true comparison, we had to do it out of OR Tambo, because there everybody means out of OR Tambo. And even there, I think we compare quite favorably. Obviously, turnaround times, are critical, because
explain what you mean by turning around an aircraft.
Okay. What I mean by turnaround times is that, if you have a flight, leaving from Johannesburg to Bloemfontein, and it's going to come back from Bloemfontein to Johannesburg, okay? What we measure, if you look at the slide and we talk about 30 minutes, is that when an aircraft actually lands in Johannesburg, and it has to then fly back, to Bloemfontein, how long does it take you to offload, the passengers, to clean the aircraft, to refuel the aircraft, in order for the aircraft to depart again, to that station? And so that's what we call a turnaround, time, okay? And I made the point that in the smaller stations were able to turn around the aircraft in a shorter period, like 20 minutes, because it is a smaller station, there's less congestion, and we're able to turn that aircraft around. This is an important, indicator for us. So the reason why this is important, for airlines, is because if you're able to turn your aircraft quickly, it means you can also increase the utilization of your aircraft. Okay, and that's why this indicator is particularly important, to airlines. So the quicker we can turn around the aircraft, the better it is, because by the time you've turned it around in that day, you are probably able to add, at the end of the day, an additional frequency, which you would not have been able to. So you have an option of either improving your turnaround times, or you go and bring in additional aircraft, which is inefficient. So this is why this particular indicator, is important.
Just to explain why we ask you to explain the technical terms as you present. Sometimes our whole committee meeting is viewed on view from the house, where South Africans watch the whole proceedings.
Yes.
So we might be understanding the technical concepts that we're using here, but the viewer at home might not understand. So bear with us if we interject from time to time.
Not
asking you to clarify.
Not a problem. As I already indicated, obviously the turnaround time has a direct impact on aircraft utilization. As you can see, that's why if we then look at the slide, you would see that, we believe that SXpress does fairly well in terms of, utilizing, the aircraft, because it's one of our most, expensive assets. When it sits on the ground, it's not making money. So, for an airline to make money, the aircraft has got to be continuously flying, and hence aircraft utilization is absolutely critical. Just before going into some of the operational highlights, I just thought it would be important just to give the portfolio members a sense of how many flights SAExpress operates. SAExpress operates over 140 flights per day, which is basically during the week, because over the weekend we scale down a bit, given the fact that we're mostly a business airline. And what most people don't know is that we have the second highest number of flights in the domestic market. We've got 23 aircraft. Because we turn the aircraft around, quite quickly, and because, it is an airline that's based on frequency versus, huge, capacity, we find that, we have the highest number of flights out of ORT. And it's important as well, to highlight that, especially in the context of some of the figures that we're going to show right now, from an operational perspective. Internally, our on-time performance is measured on a 10-minute rule. However, industry measures, on-time performance on a 15-minute rule.
You say you've got the second highest number domestically or in the continent?
Well, maybe, at its base, to describe the thing, the second highest number of departures out of OR Tambo. Yeah, so to be both domestic and to the regional. So in our case, when we count those number of flights, we're counting both the domestic flights and, some of the regional flights that we also operate.
And if you're flying 140 per weekday, how many are you flying over weekends?
As I indicated, I don't have, the exact number right now, but we scale down on weekends, and the reason why is that typically the type of route that we operate to, such as Johannesburg, Bloemfontein, and Kimberley, are business routes. And during the week, we try to operate by the hour, you know, every hour, I mean, to some of those markets. And during the weekend, you'd find that, I mean, we scale down to 3 flights, I mean, for example, in Bloemfontein, only 2 to Richards Bay, and so forth. So it brings down, I mean, the number. So that's why
we don't want to go where I want you to go to. You say that you fly one aircraft on a Saturday and one aircraft on a Sunday to Kimberley.
It's based on the bar, Chair.
But it would be nice to have the figure. If it's not today, you can send it to us.
Well, of course, I mean, the operator, he should have it, so he will respond to that. In terms of our overall on-time, I mean, performance, if we compare April to September 2008 versus April to September 2009, we registered an on-time performance level of 80%, which excludes, I mean, weather-related, I mean, delays. And you see that, I mean, we've shown you, I mean, month by month as to how our performance has been doing. And you see that, I mean, we've basically been registering a big improvement, I mean, in our on-time performance, except for 2 months, which were the month of May, I mean, and June. The next slide actually then just shows the number of delays that we experienced by route. So we've broken it down to, you know, in Johannesburg, Bloemfontein, you know, we had 19% for arguments in Cape Town, Port Elizabeth, 13%, Kimberley, unfortunately, 23%, and in Cape Town, East London, I know, I mean, there was a question around that one. I mean, there we've, you know, registered, I mean, big improvements as well in terms of, I mean, delays. I think that, I mean, in terms of delay, and I'm not trying to put forward any excuses for some of the delays, but just, I mean, to clarify, I mean, that's why I think for me it was important to highlight the number of flights that we have, I mean, out of Oa Tambo, and to highlight the type of operation that we run. Because those two things have a factor on how we end up performing from an on-time performance perspective. I'm not saying, I mean, it's an excuse as I indicated, but sometimes, I mean, it has an impact. And just to make a very simple, I mean, example. If, for example, I mean, we have a delay on a 6 o'clock flight in the morning, which is going to Bloemfontein, and that delay it's not necessarily caused by the airline. It could very well be a passenger that arrived late, you know, at the boarding gate, and we spend some time waiting for the passenger to arrive. By the time we depart, we're 10 minutes late. We then try very hard, you know, as part of our operations, to make up the 10 minutes. Okay. But sometimes it doesn't. You know, we can't make it up, and it has a rolling effect for the rest of the day. And the reason why 10 minutes, I mean, for us is so important is because if you're turning your aircraft around in 30 minutes, it means when you land back, you don't have 30 minutes now. You have to try and turn the aircraft around in 20 minutes in order to make the 10 minutes. And it's not always possible, although that's what we try to do to then make up the time. And it's really as a result of the fact that we're what we call a commuter, I mean, airline, where, I mean, the aircraft lands and we try and turn it around as quickly as possible and it goes. So it becomes quite difficult, I mean, to explain because, I mean, in the end, when we measure the delays, unfortunately, we can't just measure the delay, I mean, for the morning only. It now has had an impact on all the flights for the day, although it was caused by one delay early in the morning. But it has a ripple effect and it shows in the figures as well. You can't pull it out and say, oh, it was only for that. So those are just some of the reasons why, when you look at some of the figures, you look at this, you know, why are these people actually comfortable, you know, with this level of delays. But these are just some of the causes or the reasons behind, I mean, some of the delays. The next slide is still, I mean, just showing, I mean, some of the delays. And what we did is that we showed you, I mean, a graph of the number of times that the flight is delayed by a route and the number of times that the flight is on time. And I know that, I mean, if you're a passenger and you're delayed, it feels like it happens to you all the time. But in reality, it's not always, I mean, the case. And as I said, it's not an excuse, but it's really just to show, I mean, the status as it is. And basically, I mean, the next slide is really, again, just to show all the various routes in terms of how we're performing on that. On the next slide, you know, it's really just to show that I think that we're quite proud of the fact that, especially in the region, we've seen SA Express seems to be recognized in terms of, I mean, its performance and its achievements. And in this year in particular, we're particularly proud of the fact that, I mean, we have been awarded the Best Regional Airline Award by the African Airlines Association of Africa, which means in the whole of the African continent, we are considered the best, I mean, regional carrier. And this was just to show, I mean, some of the awards. Some of them, I mean, we have already highlighted to yourselves when we came previously to say these are the type of awards, I mean, that we've won over the period. Our last slide is really just to show that we're not only just concerned, you know, or interested in external awards, but, you know, continuously trying to understand, you know, what are the areas of improvement that our customers are looking to. And we continuously run what we call, I mean, internal customer surveys internally to just to try and pick up what the trend is. What are the things that people are quite positive about in regard to SA Express? What are the things that they believe we need to further improve? And this is just, I mean, you know, the feedback from the last survey that was actually conducted. Thank you, Madam Chair. Those are the highlights.
Yes, I will note your hands, member. I need to write them down somewhere. Before I take your names, members, I just want to apologize for technical problems. Maybe I must put our staff on the spot. I repeatedly say to them they must examine our things, they must arrive early. Today I'm doing this in front of everybody else, hoping that it will be better next time. That we have a technical problem every time when we are sitting, and I always say they must arrive early, they must receive people, they must make sure that everything is working. I sincerely apologize for it to be not working as it should. But I think this is the last time that this is happening. I mean, this is totally not on. Members, let us go on to your questions and comments, please. Mr. Van Dalen.
Yes, Madam Chair. In the financial report on page 63, I see there are sales to related parties, which is Danel and Eskom. I would like to know what they entail. And then, is it true that SAX have received a cash injection or a bailout of, what was the amount, 445 million rand for recapitalization in this year? And if this is true, then I would like to know another thing on page number 66, which is commission paid, 51 million rand. I would like to know what that is all about. And then I see that on page 66, hotel and accommodation for 11 million rand. And then there was flowers for 26,000 rand, which I would like to know what it is. Would that not be considered fruitless and wasteful expenditure? If you look at security, you are only paying about 500,000 rand for a year on security. And then also...
Hang on. Let's do this. Let's ask... We have ample time today, so let's ask Matt some of three questions each.
Yeah.
Then we'll take another round.
That is still one question. It's because of the... The bailout.
No.
Why are these fruitless expenditures there?
There's something wrong with your counting. I counted three.
Three sub-questions in one question.
You'll come back next round. I counted three and I consider them to be main questions. And not
there's only
questions.
One left.
No. Allow me to cut you off. You'll take your fourth question there at next round. Thank you, Mr. Van Dalen. Mr. Puerono.
Chairperson, thank you, and thank you for the Chairperson and the CEO for a very good presentation. I think the success of SA Express is due to the fact that it's run by a CEO and the chair that b- both are women. And maybe we should consider it to, as a model for other state-owned entities, to take this model and apply it on a lighter note. Congratulations. You've got very good positive financials, operating profit in turbulent times, unqualified audit opinion from the auditor general. Your training as a part of your 12% of your payroll, I think it's unique. And in overall, it's very, very impressive. Your report is straightforward, factual. Even you, I haven't seen it before, you published the attendance register of your board members. I think it's positive. So I want to congratulate South African Express on a very good report, good financial results, good management. And I say again, I think it's due to the women in control.
Thank you.
Can I ask? I don't see, when I read through your report, it's all positive. I don't see any negatives. What is your biggest challenge that you face as a state-owned entity? My last comment, I'm not going into detail, but on page 40, it's again the level of the remuneration of the top management and top your directors. It's not a question that I'm going to ask about it, because if you add it up, your executive guaranteed remuneration and your performance bonuses, the top 4 or 5 probably earns more than the president of the country. So I think we need to shelve that question in a bigger picture with DPE. How do we relate to this executive payment, the level, the bonuses, and related to performance? So only one question is the biggest challenge facing South African Express.
Can I just add that you reiterated the thanks on behalf of all of us. However, we will come back to other things. We agree that financially you are performing very well, but there are other things that we still tease you on, which I think are very problematic from my side. Thank you, Dr. Korenhoff, for expressing thanks for on our behalf for them doing so well financially. Thank you very much. Mrs. Bowman? Is it Bowman or Bowman?
Bowman.
Bowman.
Yes, I also want to congratulate you. It was a pleasure reading this report. And I say ditto to everything that my colleague has said. So my questions are really for an ignorant politician to understand some of the things that are just a little bit problematic to me. I just want to pick up now, my chairperson is going to watch me with 3 questions. I want to just pick up and understand the load factor, 67%, and the drop in the numbers increase. I just want to know, you know, because the 67% maintained and then there was the big drop to 3.4. I just need to understand that. The other thing in the fuel hedging, I think that was indeed very clever. But if you could just help me to understand, now this is a gamble, really, that one takes. And I see that according to your report, rigorous analysis, you know, how does one sort of take a gamble and in a systematic kind of a way, factual? All right, we are going to get a second round, are we? All right, then I'm going to skip to this one that I've got on page 57. I would just like to understand under point number 9, trade and other receivables, your employee costs in advance, which have been a substantial difference there. If you could help me to understand just what those costs are that we're referring to. And then I'll get a bite of the cherry in the second round. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also join my colleagues and thank you very much for your nice presentation. I've got 3 questions, Chairperson. The first one would be on the industry comparison. in that the targets are lagging behind and are being addressed through specific interventions. I wonder if maybe the CEO could share with us as to what strategic intervention are you having in those targets? Like, for instance, on the question of the people living with disabilities, that there are initiatives in place to increase their engagement in order for you to draw them in. The second one, Chair, will be, I would be interested to know about the safety procedures that SACS has. Like, for instance, when you talk to your passengers in the on board, there are those who cannot hear. How do you communicate with those people? Say, for instance, in the case in cases where they have to evacuate and all that. Do you have any plan or strategy in communicating with them? And then there is another one also on the baggage theft. Are you not experiencing any problems with regard to that? Because I know SAA has got so much problems with baggage theft. Lastly, Chair, it's on the awards. I want to congratulate her on the awards, on the recognition of the outstanding leadership and the service. That's well done. Keep it up. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I think the congratulations have been given, but may I just confirm that we are all very impressed. Maybe you should just go home. You should just say they must go home and continue the good work. In the public sector environment, this is right, you know, when you have something like this. Other questions have been covered. I suppose in the answers when they do come, if the nuances that I had in mind don't come out, I'll come back. Now I just want to ask the three questions, Chair. The first is their venture into the continent and in the region in particular. What kind of problem do they face in terms of complementarity with the airlines in those countries? I suppose that when you want to fly to a country, they want something in return. There are airlines, so on, coming to South Africa and so on. How is it always possible? I imagine that it might be difficult because some countries don't have airlines, but nevertheless, they still create. How difficult is that environment? Secondly, what's the real difference with Air Link? You don't mention them. I wonder if you are related to them at all. Do you have agreements that if they fly to some place, you don't fly there? Is there a possibility of a merger to make a bigger domestic and regional airline between you and Air Link? Thirdly, it seems you are okay with personnel, but how difficult is it to hang on to the people that you have, regardless of gender, age, race, and so on, skilled people, pilots and engineers and technicians and so on. There are many out there who are struggling to hang on to their skilled people. How is it with you? Is it tenuous? Is it easy? What's the situation? Thank you.
No, I'm not an advocate. I'm not an advocate. Please don't trust me in borrowed room. I wouldn't mind to be an advocate. Chair, thanks very much. May I also commend SA Express for a sterling job. The rest of my colleagues have showered you with enough congratulations. Chairperson, the first one is the comment around
the layout and design of the annual report. It looks nice and flashy. I will pardon them because they have done well. I would have had an issue if it was not a well-performing SOE and yet have such a nice annual report. I mean, in terms of the layout. But secondly, Chairperson, I have raised this with South African Airways as well. I always prefer to remind people that I'm a rural boy. I'm from the rural areas of the Eastern Cape. And I know what it means not to have a swimming pool in your home. I know what it means not to be able to swim. I know what it means not to have access to a swimming school. I have been reliably informed and actually confirmed, this has been confirmed by South African Airways, whom we met some 2 weeks ago, that as part of your criteria when employing your staff, particularly your crew, they have to be able to swim. Now, my contention, FAA was saying it's because of safety measures, blah, 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 because when you're a crew member, you're also a safety officer. I accept that. But my contention is that is discriminatory. There is no way we could allow our national carrier and sex, if you confirm this, to have such a criteria. Because before even the race is run, some of these poor kids from rural areas are automatically disqualified. I know FAA said this is for safety, blah, 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 we can't change this. But my point was, what is it that could be done to ensure that these kids are taken through your system and not being disqualified for only one reason and one reason alone, that they can't swim? There could be other talents that they possess. And swimming, I mean, they can always be taught to swim. My question is, can you confirm that this is part of your criteria? I'm particularly disturbed about it. What plans do you have to attend to this? Because I think it's discriminatory and it's against the Constitution, if that's the case.
You must ask your two questions
speedier
than the first question.
Okay, sir. Okay, sir. The second question, Chairperson, I see in the training budget, 38 million plus was set aside for training at SACS. Now, what I want to know, how much was used in this past financial year, and roughly in which areas was this amount used? Is there value for money? Do they see value for money? And linked to that is the cadet program. I would like to know how other young people in rural areas can access forms to apply for this. I would like to come for the second round.
Okay,
thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to try to be faster because usually I take long. Yeah, I see Nana is giving competition now.
I'm going to be faster.
My congratulations are also extended on the layout. But I'm going to ask a little difficult question, and maybe the must answer as honestly as possible. And probably it comes from not having a proper social compact signed. You see, if we listen to this presentation, and if I have to listen to a presentation by any other airline that is coming, I listen to an operation, how the operation is running, its profitability, its passenger, and how it runs an operation very smoothly. But I am saying something different. As a state-owned enterprise, you have a slightly broader mandate than just being a commercial airline providing a service on a domestic route internal, because you have got other mandates that you would have to achieve. Because if you're just a normal airline, the DA is going to say privatize you tomorrow. And they're already calling for it. We have to justify why we do not privatize you, because... Okay. Justify for us why. What do you do as an airline, as an SOE, in addition to just being an airline? Tell us that, because that's what I'm interested in, because if you made that infrastructure investment, we want to know what you do. The second thing is that we would like to think that there is a national transportation plan, both for passengers and cargo, and that you fit within this plan. And how do you fit within the plan? Because to certain people, they may say there's a certain amount of duplication, because we have SAA doing domestic routes, plus we have SAA in a domestic route with Mango as a subsidiary, and we have you. So there seems to be, to us, maybe you need to explain to us the rationale between all of this so that we understand it better. Maybe there is a rationale that we do not understand. The third thing is that I wanted to say, like Mr. Nana, he is about swimming. But I have a different take on it. On the recruitment side, and I run a program called ALP, Accelerated Learning Program, where we teach maths and science. And two of our students applied to become pilots, and they're both female. Apparently there is a height restriction also, because the seat has to be adjusted and it cannot be adjusted, and that actually disadvantages females. And I can give you the names of the two females that applied, and if I think it's just under 1.6 meters or something, and if they are less than that, they can't be taken, because it's too difficult to adjust the seats for them for their training purposes. This is what we were told. I inquired about that also. I'm still waiting for a reply. But maybe you can tell us this, because I felt that that was discriminatory against females, because females are generally smaller stature. And if we need to look at that, we need to look at that. I was also, maybe give us the rationale behind, if you're a domestic airline, more traveling outside the area, why most of the measurements are taken outside OR Tambo Airport as compared to other airports? You know, because if we would look at it, we need to look at the turnaround times from the other side also. Because you said to us you are the second largest domestic airline flying out of OR Tambo Airport. But from the other airports, I would think it would be better. So why have you looked at that? Thanks.
I gave you slightly more time because I have failed to acknowledge you on the first end of meeting as the new whip for the committee. Congratulations on your appointment as the whip for the committee, and forgive me for not acknowledging you the last meeting. My staff is also not very good. I keep wanting to remind me to acknowledge the new whip of the committee, but I remembered on my own. Congratulations. Thanks, Dr. Pillay. You outdid him a little bit. Okay. Much as your financials are okay, I'm not happy. You see, you have not hedged on fuel. FAA hedged on fuel. And yet you are, I don't know what to call it. Are you sister company? Because you are state-owned, both of you? I don't really understand your relationship with you say you are a feeder airline to SAA. But there are things that you do well that does not rub off on them. Like the fact that you have not hedged on fuel, and they continue hedging on fuel, and it's a risky thing to do sometimes. But also this thing that you call OTP. Is it on time performance? Theirs is much, much better than yours. It's in the 90s. 90s, remarkable. It's one area where you should be sharing. So you find pockets of excellence in SAP, which do not exist in SAA, and you find pockets of excellence in SAA that do not, and yet you don't find a coming together where you learn from one another, or you, your excellence of one airline benefits the others. I really don't understand your relationship. The other issue is we don't know if we have a hidden relationship with SA Express Link. We really want you to. SA Link, sorry. You see, Express creeps in. The confusion creeps in. I ask this question to SAA that I don't understand why in Kimberley, for instance, all three of you, SAA, SA Express, SA Link, you share the same personnel, the same system, the same check-in counter. Who is actually cushioning who financially? I don't understand that nature of this. So if I'm a not-so-regular traveler, in fact, it took me sitting on this public enterprise to know that I have to distinguish between the three of you as separate entities. It's not an easy thing to do. So that relationship, if it exists, can you elucidate it to us, how it exists between you and SAA Link? Your personnel employment profile. Your grand total of African is 46. Your grand total of white is 41. That is too close. If you look into the actual demographics of South Africa, that's too bad. What are you doing about this? But also, you recruit from the best achievers in mathematics and science. Now the question is, that recruitment, you want ready meat. What contribution are you making to make sure that our schools will produce better mathematical learners, mathematics learners and science learners? And you have to show us that you are planting into township schools, into rural schools, for that mathematics and science excellent learners that you recruit into your cadet system to change this bad demographic of 46 is to 41 of African to white. So, much as you are doing so well financially, I don't see you making a conscious effort to change. You see, participation of Africans, I don't even want to say into the main economy, into the so-called secondary economy, by mere employment, even if it's conceptual employment, I don't think that you are making a dent if you look into your demographics, much as your financial performance is so excellent. The other question is not found anywhere in your presentation today. I fly your airline from Johannesburg to Kimberley. If I'm connected, most of the time I'm forced to connect. Your trolley. I'll ask you a question similar to the one that I asked the DG for education, whom I'm so happy is no longer a DG in the public sector anymore. Went from education to health. When I said to him years ago, tell me, why is it the pens that we are using in our schools, imported from the UK, this big pen from the UK, this pen, I'm sure the one that you hold is also from the UK, but I can't blame you, but I'm saying in our own schools, where we give stationery for free, much as we have Mondi, we have Subcon. Most of the things that we offer as a state to public schools has been manufactured and imported outside the Republic. He said, don't ask me that. I'm a DG for education. I've got nothing. Go and ask that question to trade and industry. Your choice in your aircraft, are from United Emirates. They are second-hand trolleys from another airline. I've made it my business to read each and every one of them over a period of time, which are made, it's not even steel, it's zinc, something that is abundant in South Africa. You know those trolleys are zinc. I don't think it's steel. What is that material that's making your trolley? It's push trolley, that's your server trolley. Aluminium. Whichever, whatever metal it is, we have it in abundance in South Africa. It was once used by another airline. Why can't you activate the economy? I ask this question every time to every state SOE. What are you doing about innovation? What are you doing about manufacturing? You might not be a manufacturing company yourself, but there are things that you need as an airline like trolleys, that you can make sure that they are manufactured by a manufacturer in South Africa using South African resources. Yes, it might come at a cheaper price for you to buy a second-hand trolley from how many trolleys? If you fly 140 aircraft, or you said you have 30 aircraft, it means you have roughly how many trolleys? And you have spare ones also. Why can't you make sure that somebody in South Africa manufactures trolleys? It might not. Sometimes you look at the water that you are offered. You look for six on the barcode. You don't find it. Six means bottled or manufactured in South Africa. Sometimes you look at the food that you are fed. So I'm sorry if I'm very hard on you. That's what we are supposed to do. We should not be fooled only by the beautiful financials that you are putting before us. I think you have for the mere fact that you are performing so excellently, you are well positioned to can influence so many other things. We will call you back on your profile of employment, of all these things. Even if you look into your industry comparison, I will tell you, I'm sorry I'm being lengthy. I'm not going to speak in the second round. I was in Uganda, and then one deputy minister, they call them not deputy minister, they call them something funny, like junior minister, who was fired because she kept on saying to the president, when the president changed the constitution because he wanted a third term, that woman was instrumental and said, you can't do it. And the president kept on saying, but I'm doing better than Idi Amin. Says, why do you compare yourself to Idi Amin? Benchmark yourself with excellence, not with the worst. Now, this industry comparison, you're comparing yourself with the worst. You are the best in the industry. So it doesn't offer me comfort to say that you'll take the industry that is underperforming as compared to you, benchmark yourself for that industry and pat yourself on the shoulder and say you're doing well. Set yourself new standards. Maybe we should allow you to answer the first round of questions and take the next one. So remember, I carried on for too long.
Madam Chair, can I just respond to the questions in no particular order? And the reason for that is because I'm going to answer some questions and my colleagues are also then just going to respond to any of the others. Okay. I think the first set of questions, the third question will be responded to, by SB. But in terms of, why our hotel accommodation is much higher, than the cost of security. Essentially, our pilots get trained, abroad. Okay, so it's not, hotel. So, when they go abroad, obviously we need to put them up, hotels, because they have to go for recurrent training every single year. And the recurrent training for there is no simulator for the type of aircraft that we operate in South Africa or in Africa. So the only place, they can go to is abroad, in the UK and in the US. So that's the reason why it looks like it's a high amount that's spent on accommodation.
In terms of the flowers, yes, indeed. I mean, we do buy flowers, and we buy flowers, I mean, for our employees. We buy flowers, I mean, for some of our areas, because we think it's important that, I mean, if you're an airline in the service industry, that the service industry is driven by people. And it's how you take care of your people that also converts into what your figures look like at the end of the day.
We're waiting for our flowers.
So as a result, yes, we do, I mean, spend, I mean, on that. On the question on the recapitalization, I'm going to allow Essie to respond to that, because she will then just give you the split in terms of, I mean, what the breakdown on that is. On the question around, I mean, load factor and why we talk about a 67% and it still remains 67%, even though year on year we're talking about a 3.1% growth, because we're still a growth. What I was showing in terms of the growth is that the previous year we've grown our growth figure was much higher than the growth figure in the last financial year. Load factors are actually calculated on the number of passengers over the number of seats. So when we say that you registered a 3.1% growth in passengers and it still ends up with the same load factor, it basically means that we grew the number of seats that we offered in more or less the same proportion, you know, as the growth in the market. So we could keep the 67%, I mean, load factor, I mean, stable. So there's a direct, I mean, correspondence on that. Then you asked the question around, I mean, fuel hedging and the comment that we made about after aggressive analysis we chose not to hedge. There are a number of things, I mean, that you need to consider, I mean, around that. And it's not just the fuel price only. It's not the price of the crude prices only, I mean, that relate, I mean, to that. But it's also, I mean, a makeup of, I mean, what the rand dollar, I mean, exchange is, I mean, as well. And it's also a makeup of what portion. In our case, we also looked and said what portion of our costs are actually in dollars as well. So when we had done, I mean, very detailed analysis, I mean, what we actually got to is that we would find ourselves, I mean, speculating more around the rand-dollar, I mean, exchange, and that we don't believe, I mean, we're in that business. So those are just, it's a simplistic, I mean, response, I mean, to the analysis that was conducted, but it's really having looked at various, I mean, issues, as I said, rand-dollar, the fuel price, the portion of our costs which are paid, I mean, in dollar, so that, I mean, we say, okay, as, I mean, the dollar increases or improves or strengthens, you know, how is it likely to impact on our costs and so forth, and at what level do we think it makes more sense, I mean, to hedge or not, or hedge. And after that detailed analysis, we did not believe that, I mean, we should be, I mean, hedging. And that was the policy decision that we took for that year. In terms of, I mean, and I said no particular order, in terms of the employment of crew, it is true that, I mean, even our airlines, you are required, you know, to be able to swim in order to qualify as a cabin attendant. And the explanation is exactly what, I mean, SAA describes to you, that, I mean, it is a safety requirement. Because they're not really, I mean, a lot of people view cabin attendants on the aircraft as people who are there to serve food. It's not really. You know, in our eyes, I mean, they're actually safety officers. So they need to be able to get you out of that aircraft as safely as possible should there be an incident. And in the event that, I mean, the aircraft has to land over water, if you have somebody who does not know how to swim themselves, you already have a problem because they don't know how to get, I mean, you know, help assist other people as well around that. I take your point that, I mean, you know, it is, I mean, possibly, I mean, viewed as discriminatory, but, I mean, this is also, I mean, CAA requirements in our case. I mean, if you read the CAA requirements, it does, I mean, require that. You then,
Nana, sorry, just before you proceed, can you chip in there?
Yes,
if you don't, I'm going to do it on your behalf.
I would want to check. That's not my question.
Yeah.
My question is not whether this is a requirement or not.
Yeah.
It has been confirmed by FAA before.
Yeah.
But my point is that, in my view, that is discriminatory.
Hmm.
It's in fact against the Constitution of this Republic. And therefore, something has got to be done about it.
Hmm.
Because you are discriminating against poor kids who can't swim, even before the race has started. I'm putting it to you that those poor kids could have other talents that could be of great value to your life.
Let's give them a solution.
Can I answer that question? Also add to that, because after Mr. Nana asked this question last time, I went and read the CAA regulations, because I said I must read this regulation.
Mm.
It says, for you to be a qualified and a certified person, you must have the ability to swim.
Mm.
So I think what Mr. Nana should be asking is, and this is a question that I would like to ask, is that it must not be an exclusionary criteria towards selection. Mm. You should select people based on merit. Mm. And if they do not have the ability to swim, we should then say you will be given, here's a facility for you to train, you will be given this amount of time to come up to speed to qualify you to swim, and then you will be recruited. If you do not make the grade after that, then that's a different issue. But at least you shouldn't cut off a person before you even give them a chance. And that is the kind of thinking that we were coming to, because I'm still following up the thing about the seats and the height, and I will take it up. And
it's an important thing for us, so we'll spend some time on it. I've noticed you see, let me take Mr. Pandalin first.
Yes, I think that we are saying that you should make it part of your training, so that we have nice fit pilots, as, you know, they will be training and that will be extra for them. They don't have to run a 2.4. They can swim all the time. So they will be fit as well, and they will be mentally stronger if all of them have to swim for exercise in the training. That will be a good idea.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Kululo.
Thank you very much. Let me add also to my colleagues that another good example is the police and the soldiers. Actually, they do apply for such jobs, but once they are accepted, then they undergo the training of being a policeman or a soldier. I just wanted to add to that. Thank you.
Just before I give you, I've noted you too, Susan.
Okay.
You'll determine whether it's you or himself. The Department of Education in the Northern Cape once created a post for Community Development Officer. A person that was supposed to make matric results, amongst other things, the best in the country. Mm. That person had to have a driver's license, because that person was going to drive the vast geographic spaces of the Northern Cape to do that. I qualified for that job, I did not have a driver's license. They said to me, in 3 months' time you should acquire a driver's license. We will give you a vehicle, we will take you to the driving school, we will pay the money for you to acquire them, we will employ you provisionally within these 3 months. If within the 3 months you have not received a driver's license, we will take the second best person that qualifies in the interview. That's how I got my license. We are suggesting, I think we must put this very strongly to you and to SAA, that we think that is how you should approach it. But we will hear from you. Susan, and you, sir?
I think, thank you very much, I mean, for making that example, because maybe, I mean, you know, that's one thing that I missed in the present, in the way in which I responded. Quite honestly, that's exactly what we do. If, I mean, we interview somebody and you find that, I mean, of the 10, I mean, criteria that they need to meet, that they meet 8 or 9 of them, but you find that they're disadvantaged because of the swimming, we do give that person the opportunity to say, look, we would like to think, because we've met all other criteria, but this is a little bit of a challenge. So please, could you go and try and see if you could at least learn to swim one less, isn't it? One length of the pool. And you don't have to be, you know, whatever. Not just a length, I mean, across, not the Olympic pool, but we give them the opportunity to go and come back. So maybe I did not make that clear, because indeed, I mean, it is one of the, I was responding in terms of, is it one of the criteria that we use to determine whether the person is employed or not? Yes, it's true. I mean, it's one of those. But we do not, you know, I mean, if the person has already met, and, you know, I mean, other criteria, we give them the opportunity to say, please, I mean, can you go and try and at least learn to swim across? You don't have to be a marathon swimmer. You don't have to be, I mean, a person who can compete, but just to be able to keep your head above the water across the length. And we've done that a couple of times, and we've had people who've gone back, I mean, to try and learn how to swim and come back and have been employed, I mean, in our system. The one thing we don't do, I mean, Chairperson, is that obviously we do not pay the cost of that person, I mean, learning how to swim, but we give them the opportunity to say, please go and do this and come back. And if you can do it, then we will employ you.
And we recommend that you look into paying the cost also. It could be a determining factor that only because this person cannot have the means to go and access a facility where they will learn to swim, it might be finally the determining factor that they will not get the job.
Yes. We will definitely, I mean, look into that.
Your colleague wanted to say something on the issue.
Madam Chair, thanks very much indeed. In fact, Caesar has qualified exactly what I wanted to say. Thank you.
Sorry. Okay, and then the other question was in relation, to training. And the question was, where have we actually spent all of this money for training? A large portion of our training would be what we call technical training. Because, the bulk of our people, when I talk about 800 and something people that we employ, over half of those are operational staff, which is cabin crew and the pilots. And they are required, to go for yearly, trainings, to ensure that, they remain compliant with or keep their licenses. So that's the one. So the bulk of the training would be, in those areas. Another portion of the training is, around what I'd already described, which is the cadet program. And maybe in response to the cadet program, can I also respond and bring in another, respond a little bit more broadly in terms of the other question that was raised to say, are we actually doing enough? We don't seem to be making a dent. I think that we just need to also just understand the context in which we even got ourselves, involved, in the cadet program. Previously, in the last, 15 years, what SA Express was doing was assisting SAA with its cadet program. Because SAA used to recruit the people, send them to the cadet program, but they cut back and they would still not have enough hours to be able to fly for SAA. So SA Express, played that role for a number of years. We would bring in those young people and give them the opportunity to build up their hours prior to them, going back, to SAA. When SAA terminated, their program, we then were left, with a dilemma to say, how do we try and bridge, this gap, because we no longer had, these pools of students, that we were taking care of. And that's how we came up, with the concept of the Mach 2, program firstly, and then now, the Mach 1. Okay. It is our intention that we grow it, but it's baby steps, at this point in time. As I indicated, it's only something that we initiated, last year. And we're pretty, successful in the Mach 2 program. Because the other thing as well is that the reason why you are even particular about the background or what sort of subjects the students have studied at school is because there's a high failure rate as well. We were quite fortunate, that in our first pool we had an 80% pass rate. But that really was really, really, a good a pass rate. And we achieved that as well because we gave them extra training. Where normally, they would only go through one set of, go through, the training modules, once, for argument's sake, as an example. We actually ensured, that we gave them, double of the training that would be required. Now, the double training also comes at a cost, and we had to just work with what we had at that point in time. But it is the company's proposal to actually try and grow that program year on year. The same way that we've done, with the technical apprentices. We started off, taking two, a year, because we're also trying to understand, how we can ensure that there's a high pass rate in that area. Now we take like 14, people a year, so that's growth, from taking two, in a year to 14 in a year. So there would be an intention even around, the pilot cadet program to grow the numbers as we go along, and we better understand what we need, to do to support.
Where can we get forms?
We have, in terms of, the application is online, for us, it's on our website. It's online, and it's on our website. It also describes, what the program involves and what are the steps, that would need to be taken for you, to qualify for that. So it's very detailed.
The people in the rural areas would never access a line, online and all those things. You would have to go and think about them.
Yeah.
How do you reach them? How do they apply? Because there's not an internet cafe in that rural valley. They will never ever know, even when they have passed excellently in mathematics, not unless they have a thinking teacher.
We also, in addition, do road shows. And the road shows that we do are very specific, to the areas that we fly to, such as the Bloemfontein and the Kimberleys. For the last 2 years, we've flown children from Kimberley and to Bloemfontein to come into our environment, not only just, to get an understanding or the feel of the pilot cadet program, but all the other careers, that we offer within the airline. So we do, do that as part of our
program. I'm sorry to interject again. I spoke about the rural areas. Kimberley is peri-urban. So is Bloemfontein. What about somebody in the Duke rural areas of where you, because they are South Africans, they too have a right to
compete for jobs in your airline, even when you don't fly to those rural areas.
Eastern Cape, sir. Eastern Cape.
Chairperson, I wanted to, you see, I asked the question, maybe the answer will come, but maybe I want to make it more specific now.
Yeah.
I asked, you know, as a SOE, what do you do different from a normal business in recruiting people?
Mm.
One of the things that we are doing as a society is to give hope, is to make a child come from solo or anywhere feel that he is part of South Africa and he can compete. Now, most of the time what we're finding is this, is that, and even in the education department, we start concentrating on the metric result, and then we find who completed metric and where can we get these students from, whereas we should be concentrating on the grade 9 to penetrate the market, so that grade 10, 11 and 12, they choose the correct subjects, because if they choose the wrong subjects, they're out of the equation. So I asked, you know, to many people, what do you do to target the grade 9? Now, South African Rugby has got the answer correctly. They went and identified schools where they teach rugby. They even recruit these people. In fact, some of them are even paid fees to be part of a franchise prior to them even playing a single match. So what we did in this process is a similar thing. We went to grade 9 students and we said, these are the lists of possible careers that you have. We will stand guarantee that if you join and you're interested in any of this and you complete your grade 12 and you reach this percentage of marks, and if you qualify to get in, we will find you a scholarship from our trust fund, Madiba Bay Development Trust, to train you to go and reach that. And we found that that has been such a motivator for children, because if you, you know, you take a child who comes from a rural school, he does not even know what it is to be a pilot. He has seen these planes fly abroad, he does not know, and if you tell him, do you want to become a pilot? I can't see my dad. That's his answer. It's a difficult thing. It's for white people. It's not for me. And so still you have to take him and experience and show him. And we had a guy there, another governor guy who was one of your FAA pilots, and I actually used him to go to the schools to say, you can become a pilot. Yes, he became a pilot, just like that. And we need to do things like that, and that's what we are talking about, active recruitment, giving hope. The second thing is that even if you train the person, and if you don't employ that person, but somebody else employs it, you have paid a responsibility to the country in doing this. We take small countries like Mauritius. The biggest business now in Mauritius, because they have limited resources, is to export HR. They train people because they know that if they send this person to work in another country, they're getting money back into their country. And this is a strategy that they have embarked upon. So that is what we are trying to ask, you know, how does that work? I know it's a difficult thing, but there are small baby steps, as you said. Make a CD, give it to places, send to all principals of the school. And that is what I'm asking, is between a state-owned enterprise and a compact, do you have an agreement with the education department? Do you have other things? Can you have a list of the principals of the schools such that you can send these kind of things? Surprisingly, now the Defense Force, the Department of Defense, they have got an active recruitment program which is really doing, which I actually get all the time.
Thank you. I think, I mean, the simple response is that, I mean, based on everything that has been said, clearly, I mean, we're not doing enough. We haven't got to a point where we can say we're doing enough and we're entirely, I mean, proud of ourselves of what we've done. But I do want to also just make the point that indeed, I mean, it was just baby steps. And I mean, specifically as to why we're even talking about Kimberley and Bloemfontein, I take your point that that's not rural areas, but it's a surprise that every single child that we've ever flown, I mean, to Johannesburg has never flown on an aircraft before. So for them, that was already a difference, because we all assumed that, you know, hey, you know, it's not as rural, so maybe they would have been exposed to it. All the children that we brought up, I mean, to South African Express had never flown. And they didn't even have a comprehension that indeed there were, you know, careers like, if you want to be a lawyer, you can be a lawyer but still work for an airline. You know, so that's what, I mean, we're trying to get involved in. But indeed, there is a lot more work, I mean, that can still be done. And we take that point. Okay.
Someone behind you say something to add to your
question, Madam Chair. I just wanted to add that in addition to what Cesar said in terms of the recruitment program, we do obviously take a note of what the members have said, but one of the things that we've done was to try and advertise. I know very well that HR advertised in the print media, not your Sunday Times, but your local, you know, where we know that the rural, you know, people will reach Soweto and Daily Sun and so on and so on. It's one of the things that we've done when we started the CAREC program. Thank you.
Madam Chair, that answer is incomplete because we must say, because it was at the time of Mark Maharaj was the Minister of Transport. And what happened? I was put on the selection.
Actually, I didn't give you a right.
Sorry.
You may proceed. Next time, I'm not going to allow you to.
I want to say that that answer is not absolutely honest in this process, because what happened actually...
The answer is not honest.
Yes, I'm saying that, and I'm saying to you why. They are saying now, it is an impression you created that we advertise in the other papers except the Sunday Times, besides the Sunday Times, the Sowetan and others. Let me tell you what actually happened, Madam Chair. So this is it. In 1995, 96, Mac Maharaj was the Minister of Transport, and they were doing some interview panels to look at recruiting air hostesses and other people like that. And he asked, you know, some of us to observe this thing. And actually, the truth of the matter is that despite transformation taking place, 90% of the people that applied were all white. And then we asked, where did you advertise? What did you do? We actually cancelled one recruitment session at that time, and we said, go on to Radio 702, go on to the Soweto newspaper and the talk shows in the township, and make sure that you tell this thing. And we actually cancelled interviews. There was a court case against us during that time, but we about cancelling the...
Firstly, who is this us? Secondly, Dr. Clear, you have accused them of something very, very grave and serious. You say they have been dishonest.
No, I'm not saying... Madam Chair, I'm saying they are not giving us how that happened about moving the advertisements.
Yeah, but can I ask you to apologize to them that you have accused them of dishonesty?
No, Madam Chair, I didn't say they were dishonest. What I'm saying is that in saying that they advertised in the Soweto and the others, they must also say where it comes from, that advertisement, because it didn't start on their own. The second thing is that I'm saying, even the recommendations made at that time were not fully followed through, and we had to cancel one interview panel for people because at that time, I was put onto the board at that time to look at recruitment of people, and we were asked then to relook at the thing, and we cancelled one interview and we called for re-advertisement and we had to recruit again. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that was 1995, 96. But what I'm saying, Madam Chair, I'm still coming back to my point. I think that there is no active...
Before you go to your point, Dr. Pillay, I don't want it on record that they have been dishonest to us. So you were trying to use, other words, you were saying they're not fully disclosing
the
way back.
I think what I want to say,
I don't want dishonest in our record.
Madam Chair, I never said they were dishonest, and I repeat, I never said they were dishonest. But I'm saying that there's a history to what my question comes about, and there's a history to the process that I'm asking about recruitment. And I'm saying as a state-owned enterprise, we have to go beyond the normal in terms of recruitment, because as a state-owned enterprise, it's not business as usual. Finish your metric, apply for a job, look on our webpage, and answer an advertisement in the Sunday Times or the Soweto, as it may be. I'm saying there must be an active recruitment process where a state-owned enterprise must take it to the people to understand that this is transformation and this is the kind of a job that is possible for you. You have a right to participate in this as everybody else. Thank you.
I apologize to you if I'm saying you said they are not honest, if you did not say so. And I apologize to them if an impression was created that they are not honest. And I take your point, still, that going back 1995, you had to do those extraordinary things, and it is your view that they have not been fully followed through. Thank you. You may proceed, Cesar.
Thank you. And then there was a question in terms of, I mean, if SA Express is operating domestically, what is the difference? Because, I mean, there's Mango, there's SAA, there's SA Express. There is a difference. I mean, SAA is what you call a mainline carrier, which is why today they would operate to routes like Johannesburg and Durban, Johannesburg and Cape Town, and so forth, and connect, I mean, internationally. With Mango, Mango was put together, I mean, as a low-cost carrier, which is basically supposed to focus on only the pure volume-driven routes where there is a market, I mean, for the lower fares, where people are not interested in the food or the premium part of flying, I mean, an airline. SA Express is what you call a regional carrier. A regional carrier stays away from those main routes, okay, and focuses on bringing in traffic from what we call secondary routes into the main hub. So that would be the difference, I mean, between the three carriers. And there is room for all three, because Mango does not do what SA Express does, and neither does SA Express do what Mango does. And likewise, we don't do what SAA does. Indeed, there are some routes where you find that you'd have an SAA flight and you'd have an SA Express flight. But even then, you'd find that there's a specific reason for that. And I'll use an example of Johannesburg, East London. SAA flies to Johannesburg, East London, and we also fly Johannesburg, East London. But the difference is that we don't fly at 6 o'clock in the morning and so forth. We would only capture, if suddenly there's a market at around about 11 o'clock, and we get a sense that the public is looking for a flight at 11 o'clock, but there are only 30 people that want to fly at 11 o'clock. That's when SA Express would come in, because it makes more sense for SA Express to fly 30 people as opposed to SAA flying 30 people with a bigger aircraft. So those would be the only areas where sometimes you find us flying on the same routes, but typically we do not actually go, I mean, on the same routes, and just because of the makeup of or the model in which we each pursue.
We'll put it to you that we have put it to SAA, that we are not convinced that you cannot reshape your relationship. In fact, we've been even asking, why don't you merge? If you can't merge, you must give us reasons why you should not merge. But we think that you can do something about your relationship to make it better, because you are running two boards, it's expensive, you are running two sets of personnel and all those things. Next year we will be asking you to tell us why you should not match, and if you don't match, what kind of relationships you think can optimally make sure that you deepen the synergies between the two of you, so that you don't have one airline that is extremely performing well and another one that is struggling to make a turnaround. Thanks.
I keep forgetting to switch off. On that note, maybe then I should also respond to what type of relationship do we have with SAA. The relationship is what we describe as an alliance relationship. So it's an alliance relationship, which is SAA, SAA Link, and SAA Express. And maybe the best way to, maybe a simplified version, but the best way to describe what an alliance relationship is exactly what SAA has today with the Star Alliance, where you're a partner to a bigger alliance group, and you provide wider connectivity, I mean, to the client, so that when the client or the customer books, I mean, they can actually have access, I mean, to all the routes of all the three carriers. That's why, I mean, we call it an alliance relationship, and we all use the same code and more or less, I mean, the same branding. But we are two totally separate companies, or three totally separate companies, actually. In the case of SA Express and SAA, you know, we share the same shareholder, so that's different. In the case of Airlink, it's a private-owned, I mean, airline that's owned by individuals and some banks. I mean, I think Coronation and NetBank own a portion of Airlink, so that's a privately owned, I mean, entity. So in our case, because, I mean, we're two separate companies, although we have the same shareholder, you would find that indeed there are certain things, I mean, that we work on together, and there are some that we don't. Okay, because we have an obligation, I mean, as well, to ensure that we meet our shareholders.
Have you guys costed the extent to which you might be subsidizing Airlink, which is a private company, at the expense of South African taxpayers? Maybe because you are state-owned.
Maybe the response to that is that, and maybe talk to the other questions, because you were saying we all use the same systems and so forth, and it can be quite confusing, I mean, for passengers. The reason why we all use the same systems, I mean, it's historical, first of all, but secondly, it is, I mean, one of the benefits of being in an alliance relationship. Because if one person has a system that everybody can actually use, then what you say is that everybody must pay their share for the usage. So likewise, I mean, even though, I mean, we are in an alliance relationship with SAA, even though we belong to the same shareholder, we pay SAA, you know, fully for the use of their system. It's not a discounted rate by any means. And in some instances, it may even be not higher than market rates. So, but the value that they get is that, I mean, when they invest in the system, they at least know that, I mean, there are two other players who are going to help to contribute to that investment of that system. But we pay fully, you know, and the rates that we pay are market or even above market rates, I mean, in some instances. So I do not believe, I mean, that, I mean, A-Link is being subsidized. A-Link gets the value of using the SA code and being attached, I mean, to this bigger brand, which we all, I mean, appreciate, which is the SAA brand, which is known worldwide and so forth. But from a costing perspective for the systems, no, I don't believe, I mean, that being subsidized on that. Maybe let me speak on behalf of SA Express and say that, I mean, based on what I know in terms of what we pay, I mean, SAA, we pay, I mean, market rate, I mean, for the system. So none of the things that we obtain from SAA are at a discount rate because we belong, I mean, to the alliance relationship. But what it does is that it saves us from having to invest in our own system because maybe the cost of that initial investment would be high. So the initial capital outlay would be pretty high. And then you asked, I mean, the question, and you said, why is it, I mean, that their on-time performance is 90% and yet ours is lower? Why are we not benefiting from that? It's because we run two totally different, I mean, operations. I made the example earlier that, I mean, given the type of operation that we operate, if we have a 10-minute, I mean, delay in the morning, it has a knock-on effect because we only have these short turnaround times. In the case of SAA, they have the benefit of having a combination of both domestic and international flights. Now, only in international flights, you can make up time. If you've lost, I mean, 30 minutes, you still arrive, I mean, at the destination long before, I mean, you were supposed to, and you're able to turn that aircraft, I mean, around. So because you have, I mean, the combination of both the domestic and international, the figures should, by right, always look much better than ours. And it would be interesting to see if they gave you only the domestic portion and only excluding the international portion of the services. I agree, Madam Chair. I mean, I was not saying that as an excuse, but I was trying to explain the differences in terms of, I mean, why we're sitting at 88% and why they're sitting at 90%. But indeed, I mean, there's a lot that can be.
If you compare yourself with other airlines worldwide that operate like you, how do you compare with that OTP if you don't compare yourself to SAE?
We have compared ourselves, I mean, in the domestic airline, and the only person that's closest to the type of operation that you run is A-Link. So, okay. Yes, I mean, worldwide, I mean, we would actually compare ourselves, but, I mean, there are a number of other factors that you need to consider in terms of, I mean, do the other regional carriers also operate from an airport such as OAS Tambo? You would find that, I mean, other regional carriers don't do that. You know, if, for example, we operated out of you'd find that, I mean, there surely probably would be less reason for us to be late out of Accra than, you know, out of Johannesburg, for example, because Johannesburg is a busy, very busy airport. Accra, less busy. So even if, I mean, you're running late in one area, you can always catch up. Because, I mean, the factors that contribute to an on-time performance are not, I mean, just the airline. It can be air traffic services. If, I mean, an aircraft is about to land and you've just, you know, missed your slot by a minute, you unfortunately have to then wait in a queue until they can actually get you going, I mean, again. So there are various, I mean, factors. So the location of the airport that you utilize, I mean, also has an impact, you know, on your OTP. That's no excuse. I mean, we do, as I said, that's the reason why, I mean, it's there, and it's something that we watch very closely, is because we do understand it is something that we have to continuously be targeting to improve. Yes, I'm not sure where I am now. then there was a question around, I mean, people living with disabilities and what we're doing to try and improve those statistics. And the first thing that we've done when we said, I mean, it's an area of focus for us, is that the first thing is we've identified every single area where we believe that those positions could easily, I mean, be held by people with disabilities. because that's the first thing. And therefore, then the next point of that is to have a policy internally that basically says, when we need to recruit for those positions, the first people that we're going to look, to recruit from are from the disabled to try and fill, those positions. So essentially, that's what, what we're trying to do, because there are certain positions where it would not be possible, you know, in as much as we would like them to fill those, it would not be possible to fill. So that's the process that we've undertaken so far in regard to that. And in terms of safety procedures, on people on the flight, indeed, it is a challenge. That is why sometimes you hear of airlines who run into problems or run into trouble with having turned away, a disabled, person, because there would be specific requirements to say, if you cannot see, you cannot hear, you would have to have somebody who accompanies you on the flight. Because yes, indeed, you will share, the safety information with yourself. But it's not about that. It's about if there is an incident, would you have somebody who would then be able to assist you, and would you have somebody who would be able to convey the message that we need to get off and there's an emergency. So that's why, there's certain rules and regulations around that, including the fact that, if we're going to have so many people on the aircraft, we need to make sure that, our cabin crew, in some instances, they're the ones, who assist, with some of those, issues. And they've been fully trained on how to deal with those matters. And then on baggage, indeed, we also experienced, baggage theft. We're seeing a decline, in the number of bags that are stolen. And simply because, we've been able to identify in our case which are the main routes where baggage gets stolen. And mainly it's where, people are connecting from an international flight, to a domestic flight. In our case, the people going to Botswana, like connecting from the UK, going to Botswana, that would be a route. The people going, to Lubumbashi, you'd find that that is another route where it's specifically targeted. And for that, we've put in an exercise to try and reduce the theft, where we have our own people try to monitor, some of the baggage chain and where things actually go wrong. But we equally, like all airlines experience, baggage and theft. In terms of ventures into the continent and what are the problems there, firstly, it's actually quite difficult to go into the continent simply because the bilateral, precisely for the reason that you'd find that the carrier from the other country does not have the ability to fly into South Africa. You find that it's very difficult to increase, frequencies between two countries because it's on a reciprocal basis. If, South Africa says Angola, you're allowed 7 frequencies, Angola must also be allowed, an Angolan carrier must also be allowed, to fly to South Africa 7 times. So you find that, in some portions of the continent, because they do not have, a national carrier or any other carrier or local carrier to actually utilize, those frequencies, it actually does, sometimes hinder the progress of growth, into the continent. And how are we actually trying to go around that is really, to understand, those issues and saying there is a way in which you can unlock some of those issues, and that's by going into partnership with the local people. And that's the route, that we are trying to pursue right now, to say there normally is room, to also upskill them. Because really, like any other country, if people are coming into your country, you want to say what's in it, for your country. And if we're able, to partner up, with the local carriers and try and bring up, the expertise, it does actually make life a lot more easier. But it takes time, and it does make it a lot more difficult, to get those partnerships into place. Benchmarking ourselves, internally as opposed to international carriers, I think that we take that point, and we will actually try and make sure that we benchmark ourselves with international carriers. But it was also important just to understand where we stand in the local market before we do that, but we will take that into consideration. And in terms of, the trolleys, that we utilize, we don't buy our trolleys. Our trolleys, as far as I know, are from Germany. Dave, can correct me. But we are we're quite specific in terms of our procurement, processes. Yes, in this case, we're not making the trolleys in South Africa, but we've made sure that, it's in partnership with the local partner, with the local, supplier. And I also take the point that maybe there's a lot more that we can do in that area to encourage that some of these things are manufactured, internally. I think that there are a couple of questions that I have not responded to, so FC, I know there was one, around the recap, and we'll take it from there.
AXA was supposed to come with SAA, but they couldn't because they were
seeing the transport portfolio the same day. I invited, and this is also for members, to come with PBMR, and said SAA must send a responsible person or two with them. That's for next week, Tuesday. So we're extending the invitation because we'll be discussing risk management around the airport with them. I would like you to be privy to the discussions and to chip in where necessary. So that's for next week, Tuesday, when PBM comes. We'll be having a two-prompt meeting. Is it first AXA or is it first PBMR?
I think my name.
AXA will be in the morning for 1 hour. So your people should be here early. We'll be starting at 9. Thank you.
I think on the financials, there's only two questions remaining. I'll go to page 57 first, the employee cost in advance. Basically, what this comprises of is SA Express has got a policy to basically bond the training to ensure retention and to protect our investment of training on technical and pilot staff. So the balance of the 9 million would be reduced over the period as it's depreciated. Basically, they work the training back that we invest in those employees. Regarding the bailout, I would just like to refer you to note 12 on the balance sheet. What that comprised of was, yes, indeed, we did receive a 445 million in cash, but if you look at the expensive balance of the overdraft in the prior year, the overdraft rose to that enormous amount due to the bullet payments on the on the financing of the aircraft. Those bullets were then settled in the overdraft instead of finding external finance for that. Which was a very expensive method of financing, but that was the Transnet policy then. So that was settled mainly to reduce the overdraft. And that was the whole bailout was just part of the transfer to get it settled.
Are you calling it a bailout? Why are you calling
it a bailout? Yeah, Mr. Van Dalen called it a bailout, so I was just addressing the question. No, it was definitely not a bailout.
Madam Chair, for Merton from DPE, that amount was proposed to National Treasury as a recapitalization, not a bailout. It was done on normal investor principles, and the purpose was to settle certain outstanding lease and option agreements. As on the date of these accounts, that's 31 March, the transaction by which Sachs was transferred to government had been concluded. The money had been transferred, but there were still some suspensive conditions remaining in the contract. Those conditions have all been met now, so this amount will be replaced by an issue of shares. So government will actually get shares for this amount. So it's just that this was a timing issue before the suspensive conditions were completed.
Yeah. Are we sure she is over 16 and therefore she can be employed by SEC?
Are you over 16?
Yes, I am.
There is just one question that I must answer to, which is the question around the fact that how difficult it is to retain employees. I guess what it is difficult. I mean, the answer is pretty simple. But what we decided to do at SA Express, the Remuneration and Human Resource Committee decided to put together a long-term incentive plan in order to try to have a three-year rolling program to try and retain employees for that period. It's one of the mechanisms that we had to develop in order to be able to retain employees. But it is difficult, but to a greater degree, it does, you know, give us some ability to be able to retain employees for a certain period. Thank you.
That wasn't answered, and it was this. On page 63, the sales to related parties like Darnell and Eskom. I wanted to know what that was about.
Madam Chair, also my question, maybe it must go to Dr. Jakim. about the social compact and what was the mandate given to the SOE and how is the SOE to perform, that it is acts as an SOE rather than just a business providing air transport. The other thing is that, is there a national transportation plan in which we fit into, because we need to be talking about the integrated transportation plan for the whole country.
Regarding the transaction with related parties, those relate to normal ticket sales and normal course of business.
Madam Chair, as far as the social compact is concerned, there is a shareholders compact concluded between the department and South African Express that has some elements, but not a fully comprehensive element. We have to remember this is the first year that SACS is now been transferred up to government, so that matter has to be renegotiated every year, and those principles will be improved. So it's not the end state, but it's the beginning of the matter. The second question related to access. Does it relate to access to markets or access to... On the whole issue of a national transportation plan, there are two segments to that. The first is the ELIS strategy run by the Department of Transport, and the other one is the African strategy by the Department of Public Enterprises. The strategy by the Department of Transport, who is the economic and safety regulator for aviation, relates to a number of issues. Broadly, aviation is divided into domestic as opposed to international regulations. The domestic side is regulated by a different act than the international ones. The fundamental differences are that in the domestic regulations, there is freedom for operators to choose where they operate, how they operate, what prices they ask, etc. So economically, it's been deregulated. Safety is the same in both. On the international side of things, as Caesar said a little bit earlier, there are no rights. These conventions concluded at the end of the two world wars, by which states agreed that every country will have full sovereignty over its airspace. So nobody else can tell you what to do in your airspace. That implies that to operate an international air service, you can only do so by agreement with the other country, hence the name bilateral air service agreement. Now, in Africa, most of the routes, or all of the routes, are in terms of these bilateral air services agreements. That implies that the authorities from both countries have to meet and agree on the, especially the economical terms. That's where the difficulties arise. Those are designation of airlines, whether it's one airline by a state or multi-airlines. That's a contentious issue. Then the second one is the level of capacity that's deployed. Now, in the airline business, your big risk from a profit-orientated point of view is if there's too much capacity, the average revenue that would be divided by the airlines operating on the route is too little, and everybody would make losses. So one would find that your more cost-efficient airlines would push for higher capacity or more frequencies per week. That's normally the way that it's limited, whilst your inefficient carriers will push for lower frequencies to restrict the competitive level. Obviously, the higher your competitive level, the more price competition. In the event of SACS, it has the distinction of operating smaller equipment.
That implies that for your lower volume traffic, you are able to operate more frequencies, but you have a better match of size of the equipment and the number of seats that you deploy versus the market needs. If your competitor has a very large aircraft, it will make losses if the volumes are too low. And in many cases, other countries would like to have a minimum size of a narrow-bodied or single-aisle aircraft, like a 737 or a Airbus A320, that type of MD-82 vehicle. And in those instances, on your lower routes or your less density, with less density of traffic, you will then make losses. So that makes it very difficult to come to a satisfactory meet of minds on capacity. And hence, the opportunities for South African carriers has been restricted by its counterparts either operating not efficiently enough or operating too large equipment. That depends on the speed of liberalisation. At the moment within SADC, the SADC states, it's a very slow pace of moving towards liberalisation, and there's a number of mechanisms that one can do that. But up to now it's been very restrictive, not as a result of South Africa's policies, it's as a result of the other country's policy to protect its airline. As far as the African strategy is concerned, the department has developed an African strategy. It basically envisaged SAA to operate mostly the mainline services from South Africa as far as the state-owned airlines are concerned. I must emphasize that in all of these markets, it's competitive markets, it's not monopoly situations. So SAA will operate the mainline services, and the thinner opportunities will be operated in by SACS. That's the basic thrust of it. SACS is developing, in partnership with other carriers in the African continent, also opportunities based in those African states. And because the African traffic is generally sparse, or very little, it stands a better chance to match demand and supply.
May I
get a new appointment to you? I'm at DPE,
Ms. Jenner.
You'll be appointed? I've been there since October 2006. You will probably remember that's the time that SAA and SACS, the decisions were made to transfer it to government. So hence DPE established a small aviation team, and myself and my colleague Mondi here is represented here. Yeah.
Forgive me for thinking that you are a newly appointed chartered accountant with aviation specialization. Congratulations on your achievement of being so highly skilled, but maybe I'm running old. I'm getting old. I don't remember having seen, I thought I should properly acknowledge you. Maybe I've seen you before, but I don't recall seeing you. Forgive me for thinking that you are newly appointed. Thanks.
Ms. Chairman, we actually introduced, as a result of Minister Maharaj, a program at the University of Johannesburg, Rao in that stage, in which we trained up a lot of people in airline management at that time.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a follow-up question. The reason I asked that question was this. You see, when SAA came to us the last time, they gave the portfolio committee a task to say that you need to talk to international relations, which was previously foreign affairs, to say that they should open up the market to our airlines much more openly, because SAA is taking Africa to the world and bringing Africa to South Africa. But the point they raised with us during their presentation was this, that the African market is a very complicated market because it's, the volume is small, but the need for us to go into those areas is big.
for political and social reasons. Therefore, SAA would not be the ideal vehicle to go into those markets, and despite their logo taking Africa to the world and bringing the world to Africa. So therefore, when I was reading what they said to us, and when we were looking at this, I was saying, and when I was reading your financial statements, I was under the impression that South African Express would be more suited to that role than SAA. And therefore I was asking, in the social compact, in the mandate given to them, how did the Department of Public Enterprise align its thinking? And this comes only because of SAA presentation to us. And the second thing they said to us was that the other countries, neighboring countries and other countries, actually, it's not opposed to us. They've never been asked to open their airspace to us because we didn't have that much relationships, and it's not a priority when we go and visit these countries, and we must make it a priority now. So in that the context I was asking. So therefore my thinking was that I want to know if the Department of Public Enterprise has given that mandate, because I think that SAC is more suited to that mode of travel than SAA because of the low volume, low frequency, and it's not worth to put a big aircraft on that. So that is the reason for that.
Mr. Chairman, that is 100% correct. SAA will remain the main network airline, so it would switch basically on the major routes to the international and domestic routes. That's its role. SACS will perform the smaller routes, and as you quite rightly said, traffic in Africa is sparse. So it is a better mix, and SACS has an excellent cooperative spirit, which will enable them to do joint ventures with African airlines, because if we exclude other African airlines, those governments will just say no. So how does one break it, you know? The only way is to actually to cooperate on an airline of an operator point of view, as they call it. So in our African strategy, we have a definite role for SACS, and it is busy deploying that at the moment, and SAA will concentrate on the larger routes connecting to its hub.
Wonderful, TP. As Express, just to add on to what Dr. Jay just said right now, it's always been regarded as a catalyst to go into these markets, and I do agree with you, I'm an honorable member. As Express, due to the size of its operations, is not seen as a threat in Africa, and therefore the possibility of it being able to raise and materialize joint ventures in the continent. One key example is the Lubumbashi operations to the DRC, which has shown continuous growth, and is part of SAA's African expansion strategy, which we as the DP fully support.
Thank you. Just in addition to that, I just wanted to confirm that indeed that mandate has been given to the African Express in terms of the shareholders' compact. As Cesar indicated, that one of the things that we're focusing on is the intra-Africa expansion strategy. That has been acknowledged by the shareholder, which is a mandate clearly indicated to the board. We started with that program, especially in the DRC. I definitely agree with you that SAA Express is the right regional carrier which should expand in terms of your statement to expand more into Africa.
I want to thank you, Mr. Sana. Therefore, I would like us to take the second round, and I'm not going to give anybody permission to leave at the committee. There is one housekeeping issue that I want to deal with committee members before at the end of the meeting, and then ANC members to still meet. And before this, I promise you, but it's not only ANC members, but the DA member led the pack. He was the president. Okay, let's take the second round.
Yes, Madam Chair, I just wanted to know When I asked about the hotel cost, they said, well, it was training in outside of the country. But I see there is a place for training, and I would have thought that as 38 million would have included the hotel and the stay of those pilots. And as we are not operating like internationally, see, if you have, let me allow to finish my question in the beginning, is that if I'm a father and my children come to ask me for some money, I give them the money, and then they come back next week and I see they bought a new car, and they haven't paid me back yet. So then I want to know, you know, why do you buy that money? He says, well, I've got some money now, I can buy the car. I said, but it's my money you bought the car with. See, that's why I want to say, if you want to borrow money or get a loan or whatever it is, you must make sure you don't waste the money. Then I will be happy. And if you then pay the directors or the board members bonuses that are 2 million rand and 2.7, I think, was the bonus of the highest one, altogether about 5 million rand, then I say, well, you are paying the directors with my money. So I want to know, you know, what's going on there. That's how I would have ended my question. And if you had allowed me that then, you know, I wouldn't have had a chance for a second bite at the pie. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr.
Manna. Thanks, Shepherd. Shepherdson, if my memory serves me well, it was either at South African Express Airways or SAA when this committee raised a question about a number of pilots that are due for pension. And the response that was given to us was that, I think it was SAA, was that there is an abundance in that field. Everyone wants to join the family. But in the annual report, I know it's not you who said there is an abundance, but in the annual report you acknowledge that there is a scarcity in that area. I also acknowledge the fact that you have a program that is running parallel in trying to address that. But given the number of pilots that seem to be due for pension, are you confident that with the intake in terms of training pilots and your recruitment strategy, will you be able to meet your demands in the field of pilots, in the area of pilots? That's the first one. The second one, Jefferson, again in the annual report, around your liabilities or expenses, I am unable to lift out an item on your loyalty program. How have you captured it in the annual report? Because I can imagine that the Voyager miles that we earn, the food that we eat on the lounges, you somehow have got to share cost with the South African Airways. How is that captured there, and how much does it cost? And the last one, Chairperson, there is a good saying that says, if it moves, or if it flies, or if it talks, do not buy it, lease it. I was pleasantly surprised some few weeks back that SAA's 50 plus fleet, only about 9 of those are owned by SAA. May I check the total complement of your fleet, and do we really own, if we not, how many are on lease? Thanks.
Chairperson, maybe I need to be guided by you, because part of our oversight here is also on the department, you know, and so to an extent we need to, you rule if my question is in order or not, and if you say it's not in order, I wouldn't take any offense. Chairperson, we requested from the department
repeatedly the issue for us to understand and to get a comprehensive idea about appointment of boards, the number of people, the qualifications, the method of appointment and the remuneration strategies that they are using, such that it doesn't become embarrassing for us to ask people here about remuneration, so we understand it better from the department side. Because it's very embarrassing to be here today and to ask a person, why are you getting paid more than a president? Because it's really not them who decides that. It's the department that decides that. Now, we have requested this in the past and it has not come. Maybe we should specifically ask Dr. Chakhim now to say, for this aviation department that which is under his wing, in a sense, to maybe give us that breakdown of the thinking. So maybe if we understand the rationale about how they are thinking, maybe we understand why they are going the route they are. Because to me, when I looked at the board, I was quite surprised that some of the members, let me just say, I'm in order. Okay, thanks. See, I was worried about somebody like Stavros Nicolo, who is a pharmacist, who's an Aspen Pharmaceuticals, no experience in aviation. I know him personally, he's a good friend and he's an excellent manager. But the thinking behind something like that, I would have also thought that a person like Glenn van Heerden would be a little bit of a conflict coming from the car hire industry, and especially now with the packaging of how you are marketing and selling, whether there is no conflict of interest. I don't want to raise further things, but I just needed to find out from the department what was the thinking, how did they appoint people, and what was the strategy. Did they have a strategy in looking at recruiting people for this? That was my question to the department. I also want to say, Madam Chair, I'm still not convinced here now from what I heard today, and we're going to have to answer this question. How do you operate differently as a SOE as compared to somebody else? Because I know my good friend down the line there is going to come down and say, we must privatize these people, and I want ammunition to say we mustn't privatize. If I'm going to say, no, SOE does this, then I need that to know that they are doing that. I need that to know that they are, you know, making trade with the neighboring African countries. I need that they know that they are developing those African markets. I need to know that they are working with DTI to say, providing support. I need to know that they have got an accurate recruitment strategy. I need to know that they are selling hope. They've got a corporate social responsibility. I need to know that they have got a procurement policy that stimulates manufacturing down the line and stimulates industry development. I need to know that there is maybe an investment program that is taking place from where they are going for. I know that it's just new. And I know that SA Express has just taken over from Transnet. But I'm saying that if now itself that is built into the culture of moving forward, then we understand it's not business as usual with this industry, it's slightly different. And therefore you will then get Mr. Van Dalen not saying it's a bailout, but it's an equity injection. Because he'll see it as an equity injection, because he sees what you are doing for the country.
You are protected. He's out of order by using you as an example every time he wants to make
his point. No, okay. My third point is that we have World Cup coming up next year, and I don't want us to be blind to this. We were very, very disturbed. I didn't raise it, but we were very disturbed at some of the responses given to us by SAA about the World Cup and how they're going to increase fares, and they were justifying it on a commercial basis. And I was saying, you're missing an opportunity to market your country. And please, guys, it's not about just commercial venture. We are SOE. The other commercial pilots, commercial airlines could have said that, not you. So we'd like to know whether you have similar thinking or what is your thinking. How are you going to spruce up our airlines? How are you going to market 2010. And how are you going to show that within the country it is a pleasure to travel, even decorating your airlines, making something different? Just tell us what your strategy is.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think these two colleagues actually have taken most of my questions because they were based on the 2010, the plan thereof, and also the complement of their aircraft as to how many do they have, how many leased, how many paid up, and so on. And maybe, if I may, just put one more. It's on the BEE and procurement, actually, if they could maybe say something about that, as to what are they doing with regard to that. Then that's all. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, no, I know I said I won't ask the question, but on 2010, when was it, what do we call it, Mr. Pandem? Davis Cup. No, the Davis. Davis Cup, yes. Whenever there is a major tournament, including the ice, what is that one that we hosted on the ice? And if you literally can't fly out. If we had not overseen, and then you wonder about the volume. If you had not pre-booked 2 weeks in advance and you taken by, you know, your friends down, that the tournament either in Cape Town or in Johannesburg, you literally don't have a plan. It was a hazard. So it looks like you are happy with what you have now, but the worst is still to come. When it comes to, I mean, when there is a major tournament, we get grounded. And if only a section of the population will be interested in that, as compared to what the interest would be around the 2010 World Cup.
Just to take, I mean, the first couple of questions, in terms of the demand, I mean, for pilots, in our case, we don't sit with the problem of saying, oh, we've got so many who are about to go on to pension. And the reason for that is because we are probably the entry ground for the people who want to come in and go to SAA. So the pension problem or retirement problem actually sits with SAA. But we do sit with the problem that, I mean, because people are always pilots, he's a pilot behind me, he always says they're a strange, I mean, animal. Because, I mean, for them, it's about flying the bigger aircraft. I mean, so that's our challenge, that, I mean, we lose our pilots, both, I mean, to the other domestic carriers who fly bigger aircraft and, I mean, to the international market. And indeed, that is why, I mean, we've initiated the cadet program to try and see if we can bridge that gap. But we're always going to have the challenge because you can never train as fast as, I mean, you have, I mean, people coming in. But equally, in as much as we lose, I mean, to a bigger carriers like SAA, we also benefit from the other smaller carriers as well, precisely because, you know, maybe they fly something which is slightly smaller and they want to come and fly a slightly bigger aircraft in the case of SAA Express. On the loyalty program, the reason why you don't see it there is because we don't own a loyalty program, okay? And in terms of, I mean, and therefore, the loyalty program belongs, I mean, to SAA, and that's why SAA would be the one that accounts for the loyalty program. Yes, when you fly with SAA Express, you earn miles, okay? But the way in which, I mean, we do it is that, you know, they what we call an earn and a burn. Earn, you earn the miles, you fly, and you earn the miles, you keep them. The day you want to use them, that is what is called a burn policy. Now, you can earn the miles, I mean, some people earn the miles on SAA Express, some people earn the miles on SAA, but then they also have the ability to burn their miles on SAA Express. So it's a reciprocal, I mean, arrangement. So we basically, between ourselves and SAA, sit down and compare, saying how many people have earned on us, how many people have burned on us, and, I mean, basically you find that, I mean, those two actually net themselves out, which is why, I mean, you won't see anything in our books, I mean, related to that. But the most important thing is that we don't own the Voyager program, so we would never account for that.
I understand that, but isn't that a cost to you?
That's what I was explaining from a cost perspective, that, I mean, the cost part comes in terms of, I mean, the earning and the burning. But because there are these two portions, where you earn, I mean, at the money. If people on who flew on SAA Express only earned the miles, but they never got, or rather, earned the mile on SA Express, but you never had SAA passengers who have flown purely on SAA trying to burn their miles on SA Express, there would be a problem because there would be an imbalance. But because you can earn and burn, then that's what I'm talking about, that you look at the two programs and saying, how do you net the earn and the burn? The earning and the usage. Okay. And then on the third...
Just maybe what SAA also told us. It is, although it's listed as a liability that needs to be there, it's a controlled liability in the sense that they have only certain number of seats, and it's usually no extra cost or minimal extra cost because it's a filler seat. And so therefore, in that extent, although the liability is listed as it is, the real liability is much less.
That's true. I agree with them on that because it is on seat availability. And then on the third one, in terms of our aircraft, we have 23 aircraft. Of those 23, 13 are owned by SA Express and 10 are on leases. So they're leased, aircraft.
How old are they? In terms of mind flow and...
I can tell you, the number of years. Some of them, are like 3 years old. In fact, of course, something. But on average, they're about 7.7 years, old. On average. Well, it's not really a mileage. Aircraft, are based on, the number of cycles, that they've actually operated. So that is not directly linked to how old the aircraft is. Because you can have an aircraft that's 10 years old, but if you use it less, you've got less cycles on the aircraft. So the cycle is a takeoff and a land is called a cycle.
Now, then your fleet has sufficient cycles left.
Oh. Yes, indeed, they are. And the way in which aircraft are done is that you find that when I talk about the your question was, do we have enough cycles? Yes, but the aircraft are designed in such a way that each part has its own lifetime. So, that's why we would talk about maintenance and saying we're going for an A check, a C check, or a D check, because it's based on the parts. So every so many hours, a certain part on an aircraft would have to be removed, and you put in a new one, okay? Or every so many hours, an engine would need to be overhauled because it's done so many cycles. In terms of us, we're not, all our aircraft are up to scratch. There's no issue. We don't anticipate any serious, overhauls on any particular major parts on our aircraft. And then, in relation, to the question in terms of how do we operate differently. I think that, for the mere fact that we operate, and I know it may sound as if it's not enough, but for the mere fact that we operate, to secondary markets, for us to say that's already, part of the contribution, but there's much more, that we do. Okay. And it's part of the contribution because I can tell you right now, we've had private airlines in this market where they try to go into some of those markets. When they don't see the return, as high a return as what they expected, they pull out. In 2 weeks' time, they're gone. You know, and that's not the attitude that we take. Yes, we want to make money, but we don't say, where can we make the most money? And therefore, because now we think that we would make more money by flying on Cape Town, Johannesburg, sorry, we're now terminating our flights, to Bloemfontein. But that's not the end of it. You listed a list of other things as well to say, what are we doing to develop, the African markets? SA Express went into Lubumbashi when no one was actually interested in going to Lubumbashi because everybody was focused on Kinshasa because Kinshasa was the hub. We said, what else is there, on the continent? It cannot be only, Kinshasa. And we initiated the route, to Lubumbashi. And now we're on 6 frequencies, a week, to that market. Nobody was interested in operating that market. Today they may be because now it's grown to a point where, there's a higher level of interest. But those are some of the things that we do. On the CSI side and procurement side and some of our investment programs, again, I believe that there is a lot, that we're doing on that. But I think that I would probably, just request the opportunity to put some of the actual feedback on some of these items to be able to give you something which is factual and updated on those issues. And then on the World Cup, we have no intention. First of all, the way in which we're preparing for the World Cup is that our understanding is that we need to actually add more capacity into the market. especially onto the route that we're flying, because we know there's going to be games in Bloemfontein and so forth, and the, what we offer currently may not be adequate. So that's what we've been focusing on, to say how do we actually bring in more of the capacity for that period of the World Cup. And we've done that by looking at leasing, I mean, additional aircraft for that period, and also possibly going into partnerships with some of the other African carriers who land here and their aircraft sit on the sit on the tarmac for the whole day until the evening. We're looking, I mean, so those are the type of discussions that we're having around increasing, I mean, the capacity. We have not gone and said we're going to increase space, because we don't believe that there's any need, I mean, to do that. We shall continue to use the tool that we use right now, which is revenue management tool, which basically, I mean, indeed, you know, I mean, if you are, I mean, buying your ticket at the last minute, you will be, I mean, disadvantaged. However, if you look at the pattern of, with some of these flights already open for bookings, so you don't even have the excuse to say they bought at the last minute and therefore I'm charging them more. So, I mean, that's what, I mean, we're doing in that. But we think that, I mean, in terms of, I mean, how people are going to remember us, it's really going to be about the service. You know, it's about service, I mean that we offer them. It's not about just trying to get them into our aircraft and make as much money as possible, because that's only going to last, I mean, for a month. And we need to make sure that, I mean, beyond that, there's more that we offer. One of the other things that we're trying to do, given the fact that we also fly to routes like Hoedspruit, where a lot of people coming and would not think of going to, is to say, what else can we actually tag onto this package? And saying, whilst we have a break, if, I mean, you are in England, and you're following your English team, and they have a break of 3 days or 4 days, maybe there's a way in which we can entice you to take a flight, I mean, to a good spread, which is something that you wouldn't have thought of, to see a lot more of the South African market.
Just to answer the question on the hotel and accommodation, those were indeed not lumped together because they differ in nature. So hotel and accommodation will relate to the accommodation only, and the training will relate to the service that was provided to them.
Mr. Chairman, the question on the appointment of the board, I think that's a broader DPE issue for the committee. As far as our unit is concerned and the SACS board, we had a look at a number of criteria on the SACS board, and we felt that it is a balance. It's a very good balance and a very strong board. As far as the specific two people, Strauss, we viewed him as a businessman rather than a pharmacist. I think he's grown beyond that. And as far as Glenn is concerned, he's already been retired from the car rental industry. And we have very, very strict guidelines in any event on the issue of conflict of interest. So we don't foresee that as a difficulty, but the added value of an industry knowledge that's very close aligned with the airline industry is of great benefit. As far as the strategy is concerned, SOE versus prioritize, I think it's best that we respond to you properly, maybe at the next opportunity. We could be very, very long on it, but I think the fundamental issue is that there is an African strategy, and the risk involved there and the partnerships that has to be forged with other African airlines is perhaps of a longer term nature than a short term profit maximized approach.
Thank you. When we meet, probably early in the year, we're going to have a serious meeting with each and every SOE on the issue of human resources. So we would like to spend time with you, not being pressed by the annual report, to really discuss those issues with you. Let me take this opportunity to thank you once again for a very good annual result, a well-tabled and presented report, and constructive engagement. We hope that you have heard us on the issues where we were recommending some improvements, because there will always be room for improvement, even when there is excellence in abundance in terms of performance. Thank you very much. We wish you a safe flight back. We would like to remain behind for the last 2-3 minutes on our own. Thank you very much. Thanks. Thanks. Member, I received a letter from Dr. Ambrosini. It's a letter written to me as a chairperson, but I would like to share two issues with you that I think relate to the committee, although the letter is written to myself. If you recall, last week we had an argument about whether ICASA is a Chapter 9 body. I still stand by my ruling that ICASA is not a Chapter 9 institute. In fact, we all know what the Chapter 9 bodies are. They are 7. So that's one of the complaints is complaining about. But the other issue that I want to beg your understanding on is the issue of intrust.